Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. U.S. President Barack Obama has selected Federal Appeals Court Judge Merrick Garland as his nominee to fill the Supreme Court vacancy created by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia last month. He made the announcement at the White House Rose Garden.
Someone who brings to his work a spirit of decency, modesty, integrity, even-handedness, and excellence. These qualities and his long commitment to public service have earned him the respect and admiration of leaders from both sides of the aisle. He will ultimately bring that same character to bear on the Supreme Court, an institution in which he is uniquely prepared to serve immediately. Today, I am nominating Chief Judge Merrick Brian Garland to join the Supreme Court.
You can read more on the court judge Merrick Garland at voanews.com. The gunman shot dead on Tuesday in Brussels following a raid linked to investigations into the Paris attacks was Mohamed Belkaid, a 35-year-old Algerian living illegally in Belgium. This is the Belgian federal prosecutor speaking today.
La personne abattue a été identifiée.
In the press conference today, federal prosecutors said they were holding two men and were still assessing whether they were connected to the shooting. A police sniper shot dead the Algerian who had an assault rifle after four officers were wounded on Tuesday during what investigators expected to be a routine search of an apartment in the south of the Belgian capital. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Russia's defense ministry said more of its planes left Syria Wednesday, continuing its withdrawal as the UN held more indirect peace talks with Syria's warring sides in Geneva. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry plans to travel to Moscow next week for talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin about the drawdown and a new push for peace in the country. Kerry said he would talk with both Putin and the foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, about how to move forward with the process of bringing a political solution to the five-year conflict. Meanwhile, the Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, held a press conference today. The foreign minister says Turkey's shelling of Syria has undermined the start of a political process. Fighting in Syria has drastically declined with the cessation of hostilities in place for about 3 weeks. A bomb has ripped through a packed bus in northwestern Pakistan Wednesday, killing at least 15 people and wounding at least 30 others. The victims were mostly government employees, according to Peshawar provincial officials. In an initial investigation concluded the explosive material was hidden under the seat of the bus and a time device was used to detonate it. Television footage showed the powerful blast completely destroyed the bus. So far, no one has claimed responsibility for the bombing. At least one suicide bomber has detonated at a mosque on the outskirts of Maiduguri, Nigeria, killing at least 22 people and wounding another 17. The reports say Wednesday's blast happened early in the morning. So far, no one's claimed responsibility for the blast. Pope Francis has appealed to nations Wednesday to open their hearts and open their doors to migrants.
Quanti nostri fratelli invece stanno vivendo in questo tempo?
The Pope, in his comments to thousands gathered at St. Peter's Square earlier today, said that those waiting at the borders in the cold and rain were made to feel like exiles abandoned by God. Meanwhile, the Pope's comments come as EU efforts to seal a deal with Turkey to halt the migrant tide from that country into Europe in return for political and economic rewards stumbled on Tuesday. The global soccer body FIFA has applied to U.S. authorities for tens of millions of dollars in damages from ex-officials indicted there for graft and recognized for the first time that executives had in the past sold votes in World Cup hosting contests. Gianni Infantino, recently elected president to clear out the worst corruption scandal in FIFA history, said the money had been meant for playing fields and kit, not officials' mansions and cars, and he would get it back no matter how long it takes. More details on this and more at voanews.com. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Hayes Wuhib coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The government says the 19 victims came from 6 different countries. 11 were Ivorian, 4 French citizens were killed, as well as 1 German, 1 Nigerian, 1 Macedonian and 1 Lebanese.
That's Emily Ayoub reporting from the city of Grand Bassam in Ivory Coast. Details coming up.
Also, 2 suicide bombers have killed at least 22 people and wounded another 17 at a mosque on the outskirts of Maiduguri, Nigeria. And Britain reportedly is considering sending 1,000 troops to Libya as part of an international force.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Nigeria, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, 2 suicide bombers have killed at least 22 people and wounded another 17 at a mosque on the outskirts of Maiduguri, Nigeria. Witnesses say the bombers were women disguised in men's clothing. One was reported to have entered the mosque early today in the Umarari area and triggered her bomb, while the other waited outside and detonated her explosive as people rushed out of the building. Maiduguri is seen as the birthplace of the Boko Haram militants and has become a focus in the government's battle to eliminate the aggressive Islamist group, which has staged attacks in northern Nigeria and neighboring countries around Lake Chad, Niger, and Cameroon. No one has claimed responsibility for today's blast.
The Ivory Coast government says the death toll from Sunday's terrorist attack has risen to 19, excluding the three terrorists. Victims were of 6 different nationalities. Today, the Council of Ministers was symbolically held in the city of Grand Bassam, where the attacks happened. Emily Ayoub reports from Grand Bassam.
Government spokesman Bruno Kone says the violence spared no group.
On note des Ivoiriens du Sud, des Ivoiriens du Nord, des Africains de la sous-région, des Occidentaux.
He says that among the victims were Ivorian from the North and the South, Africans and Westerners, Muslim and Christians. He says that it is what makes the violence all the more unacceptable. Kone announced the government will provide nearly $1 million in financial assistance to the town of Grand Bassam, local hotel and traders. Earlier Wednesday, President Alassane Ouattara, dressed in black, placed a wreath on the beach next to the hotel where the shooting took place. The president says Ivory Coast will not respond to this attack with exclusion.
Cet événement ne fait que renforcer l'union entre les filles et les fils.
He says this event only reinforces the unity of the brothers and sisters of this country and that Ivory Coast will continue to be the land of hospitality that it has always been. Heavily armed gunmen descended on the beachfront resort in Grand Bassam at midday Sunday and opened fire on beachgoers and people into a hotel. The government said all 3 attackers were killed. 3 days after the attack, almost no traces of the carnage remained, and maintenance men were busy cleaning, pulling through and moving on all the priorities of the hotel owners. The president of the board of the Étoile du Sud Hotel says the attack was demoralizing at first, but now my colleagues and I are ready to get going again. The hotel executive said the tourism industry must bounce back quickly. Standing next to him, Patrick Connet, owner of the neighboring hotel Nouvelle Payotte, agreed. His establishment was looted after the attack. If you come by on Friday, Connet said, you will see everything will be ready. Asked if he took special measures to ensure the safety of his customer, Kone said the Ivorian government has pledged its help. We have a day guard and a night guard, the hotel owner said, and the government is doing what is necessary. Ivory Coast will hold a tribute Sunday for all the victims. 24 people injured in the attack remain hospitalized. Emily Yaw from VOA News in Grand Bassam, Ivory Coast.
Britain reportedly is considering sending 1,000 troops to Libya as part of an international force. The French news agency says news of the possible deployment was revealed in a letter to Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond from the House of Commons Foreign Affairs Committee. The letter says the committee is aware of plans to send the troops as part of an international contingent of 6,000. The Islamic State militant group has expanded its operations in Libya and now threatens neighboring countries. The international force reportedly would train the army of the UN-backed unity government in Libya and help protect government officials.
There is an effort underway in North Africa to counter extremism groups. Yusuf Makaria, president of the Association of Imams of the Sahel, says a number of Algerian imams will train imams from Sahel countries to address religious and violent extremism. Anwar Haddam is a former Algerian parliamentarian and the president of the Algerian Movement for Freedom and Social Justice. Senior Middle East reporter Mohamed El Shenawi asked him about the imams who would help counter violent extremism in the Sahel.
We are all from the Maliki school, and therefore we have what is called the Wasati Islam, the Islam that is moderate between quote and quotes. But the problem of terrorism and violence in North Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa is deeper than that. It needs more than just some imams, but this is not really enough.
Were the Algerian imams successful in raising awareness inside Algeria on violent extremism?
Well, the situation in Algeria in the 90s is different, security-wise, is different from the current situation in Sub-Saharan Africa. However, the imams in general and everybody, they were not having any room for really helping in easing the tension. And Algeria might be a bad example for that. If we are talking about this imam that did not have that experience, actually, because of the lack of freedom of expression, etc., in the 90s and until now, actually.
But using scholars in Islam to counter violent extremism, which has nothing to do with Islam, is a way that some countries are adopting now. What do you think of that?
We are really facing serious terrorism right now, mm-hmm. that need really an explanation, that need really to address the ideological understanding or the understanding of the texts of the book, the sacred book of Islam. Of course, we need some scholastic effort. It's very much needed indeed. Of course, I am among those who are calling to review and have new interpretation of the sacred text that will help our youth to understand what Islam is for, because that is what we call in our in Islam the school of the purpose, that is the purpose behind the text of Islam. Mm-hmm. There is no justification whatsoever for having killing innocent civilian, for engaging in terrorism. This is against the main purpose, to protect the sanctity of life. This approach is needed indeed for our youth who are engaged in such terrorist act, and they think that is okay in Islam. This is against Islam, actually.
Is it enough to use imams to counter violent extremism in the Sahel region, or there is a need for other deeper measures?
What's going on in Sub-Saharan and in the Sahel, it's really a very serious situation. There is an escalation of this violence, there's an escalation of instability, of security matters. And I don't believe that the imams themselves will be enough. And we have actually in our Movement for Liberty and Social Justice, we just published a study calling for a serious cooperation in security matters between Algeria and Morocco. That is the solution. We need to have a serious security cooperation to face this new escalation of violence and terrorism in the Sahel, in North Africa and in the Sahel. We have in Libya, the situation in Libya is very dangerous, in Mali, etc. And only a serious cooperation at this security level between Algeria and Morocco that could face this escalation.
Anwar Haddam is a former Algerian parliamentarian and the president of the Algerian Movement for Freedom and Social Justice. He spoke to VOA's Mohamed El Shenawi.
VOA's Somali service reports today that forces from the northern Puntland region have attacked al-Shabaab militants who moved into the region. Officials and witnesses say there's heavy fighting around Souj, some 90 kilometers east of Isle. Puntland officials say none of their troops have been wounded or killed, but they report a number of casualties among al-Shabaab. The militants reportedly moved into the Puntland region on Monday.
Europe's leaders EU leaders are meeting in Brussels today on Europe's migrant and refugee crisis. The Associated Press reports the EU's migration commissioner told member states they urgently need to deliver on commitments to resettle refugees. He says the humanitarian situation in Greece is getting worse every day despite newly built relocation centers. About 1 million migrants and refugees have arrived on Greek shores since the beginning of last year. Tomorrow, EU leaders will meet with Turkish officials on the crisis. Also, Germany's parliament has approved toughening the country's rape law following a string of sexual assaults on New Year's Eve in Cologne. AFP reports the change would cover cases in which women withheld their consent to have sex but did not physically fight back. Currently, rape victims must show they physically resisted their attackers. Hundreds of women reported sexual attacks and robberies in Cologne. Many had blamed the attacks on men they described as Arab or North African. In other migrant-related news, Polish and Czech officials say a new migration route to Western Europe could open through Russia, Finland and Ukraine. The Czech Senate chairman says most of the people in his country would not accept larger numbers of migrants and refugees. And on the Greece-Macedonian border, migrants and refugees are setting up new makeshift camps near Idomeni. Reports say they're trying to escape overcrowding, flooding, illness and food shortages at the main camp. That camp currently holds about 12,000 people, even though it was meant to hold only 1,500. Migrants have been stranded at the border. They've been told there is no longer any access to the rest of Europe through that crossing.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiyis Wuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Two suicide bombers have killed at least 22 people and wounded another 17 at a mosque on the outskirts of Maiduguri, Nigeria. The Ivory Coast government says the death toll from Sunday's terrorist attack has risen to 19. And Britain reportedly is considering sending 1,000 troops to Libya as part of an international force. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
As health officials and scientists race to find ways of slowing the spread of the Zika virus, researchers are learning more about the mosquito that carries it. They hope a better understanding will lead to ways to prevent infection. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Cornell University researchers are among those trying to help developing countries prepare for Zika outbreaks. Even though the symptoms are mild for most people infected, Zika is linked to paralytic disorders and birth defects. The main carrier of the virus is the Aedes aegypti mosquito. Professor Laura Harrington says humans provide it with everything it needs to reproduce and survive. The first is water for a breeding ground.
It prefers clean water, often clean drinking water that people store through the rainy season and use in the dry season.
And the chair of Cornell's Department of Entomology says the female Aedes aegypti prefers human blood. In fact, human blood helps it live longer and produce more often. Biting any animal won't do that.
The other really significant thing that we've learned linked to the transmission of diseases is that this mosquito, unlike others, feeds almost every day. So you can imagine a mosquito that picks up any of these viruses, like Zika, is infected for life. And once it's infectious, it can go on to infect other people almost every other day.
Also, the Aedes aegypti does not travel very far. It lives within a 100-meter radius from where it hatched. Despite its limited range, current efforts to control it have not been successful. Harrington says removing water storage containers and trash near homes theoretically should work, but apparently does not. So, Cornell researchers are trying a different approach, one that would interfere with the mosquito's reproduction cycle. For example, disrupting the mosquito's mating behavior with sound waves, or developing chemicals that target molecules within the mosquito that are necessary for fertilization or laying eggs. Another approach would be to genetically alter male mosquitoes to carry substances that interfere with successful mating. Harrington's Cornell colleague, development sociology professor Alika Basu, says there's a lot that is not known about the Zika virus's social and economic effects. She says those who are poor, indigenous, or live in rural areas are more likely to be exposed to Zika and less likely to prevent a pregnancy.
We know that there is a risk of transmission through sexual contact. We don't know if, as was the case with HIV/AIDS, there is also a risk to blood transfusions or a risk of transmission through injectable drug use.
Basu says access to contraception or abortion may be major issues, considering the link between Zika and birth defects, such as abnormally small heads. But abortion runs counter to religious beliefs or laws in many countries. Nevertheless, she says, women need to practice safe sex to prevent Zika infection the way they do to prevent HIV infection. Basu says public discourse is the first step toward changing human behavior and culture. She says, however, that efforts to control mosquito breeding areas may have other effects besides limiting Zika's spread. She says it could also lower the incidences of other diseases, such as dengue and chikungunya. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
A recent aerial survey of Zambia's elephant population shows anti-poaching efforts are having a positive impact on the country's national parks. The Zambia Department of National Parks and Wildlife participated in the Great Elephant Survey, which included 20 countries across the continent. It is the first Pan-African elephant census in 40 years. The Great Elephant Census was funded by Paul G. Allen's Vulcan Incorporated and supported by the Nature Conservancy. It was initially launched in 2013 across Africa to collect data and update the status of African elephants. The Zambia Elephant Survey completes the census. It found that elephant numbers are stable in some areas, but further efforts are needed to tackle poaching. Max Brown, Director of Conservation for the Nature Conservancy Africa, explains how the survey was conducted in Zambia.
From a fixed-wing airplane, within a six-week period during the dry season, across four national park complexes in Zambia. And so it's done with two planes, so there's a duplicate survey with people in the airplane counting elephants as they fly across in tight transects across each of the parks.
The aerial survey was conducted over 21 million acres of Zambia that included national parks and game management areas. The areas included Kafue and Sioma Ngwezi National Parks and the Luanga Valley and Lower Zambezi systems. Brown says the results were excellent in that they showed the elephant population was doing better than they had anticipated.
There were 21,000 elephants that were counted, which is a good result for Zambia. So the carcasses found is within a sustainable range. And so in general, it was a positive survey showing that there's actually a stable elephant population in Zambia across the whole country.
Brown says counting the elephant carcasses and noting the approximate age of those carcasses shows the deaths were within sustainable levels. It means Zambia's elephant population is stable, even increasing, corroborating the live elephant counts. However, Brown says there is concern about what's happening in one of the areas surveyed.
One of them, the elephants have been hit very hard. It's right on the Angola border. And so there's been a lot of poaching in that area. and that another system is actually doing better than expected. And yes, that's a result of good anti-poaching work in the Kipupi National Park. And there's a group called Game Rangers International that works closely with the Zambian government, and they've been very successful at increasing the anti-poaching efforts, hiring village game scouts, and doing a good job of protection and patrolling in that park. But it's not uniform across the country at this point.
Brown says protection initiatives may need to be intensified in areas where the elephant population is facing more significant threats.
There needs to be a continual stream of funding still. A lot of these areas are funded through tourism revenues, and we need more revenue. It therefore means that we need to continue these anti-poaching efforts in the near term while the price of ivory is still high and while the demand is high. In the long term, a key issue for elephants is habitat, so we need to continue to work on all the conservation effort and on the community conservation outside of the park to make sure that these elephants have viable habitat for the future.
Brown says the Zambian government has indicated that it will launch a working group to determine not only how to protect the current population of elephants, but how to build on successful initiatives to see the elephant population grow. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
If you want to find very happy people, go to Denmark. A new report lists Denmark as the world's happiest country, overtaking Switzerland. The survey was conducted by the Sustainable Development Solutions Network and the Earth Institute at Columbia University. After Denmark, the next happiest countries are Switzerland, Iceland, Norway, Finland, Canada, Netherlands, New Zealand, Australia, and Sweden. The United States ranks 13th. Britain is 23rd, and France is 32nd on the list. The report says money does not buy happiness. Instead, health, honesty in government, social support, generosity, and freedom to make life decisions ranked high. Of course, the report lists the 10 unhappiest countries. They are Madagascar, Tanzania, Liberia, Guinea, Rwanda, Benin, Afghanistan, Togo, and Syria. Burundi holds the dubious honor of being the world's most unhappy country. This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to Africa News Tonight for the latest sports, features, and more coming up next right here on The Voice of America. For the full hour of Africa News Tonight, tune in again at 1800 UTC.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We will discuss the World Bank Conference on Land and Poverty. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Do you love sports? VOA Africa has more of what you love, an expanded Sunny Side of Sports show. More on-the-scene reports and analysis, plus what's trending in the sports world. Come to VOA Africa for the expanded half hour of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Remember, tune in starting Monday, March 21st, right here on VOA Africa.
Looking for something? Headline news? Interviews? Analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Two suicide bombers have killed at least 22 people and wounded another 17 at a mosque on the outskirts of Maiduguri. The Ivory Coast government says the death toll from Sunday's terrorist attack has risen to 19. And Britain reportedly is considering sending 1,000 troops to Libya as part of an international force. Coming up, music from Nigeria and later Zimbabweans with dual citizenship in New Zealand. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehia Swuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand your starting line is the Great American Northwest.
Kim, let's begin in the northwestern U.S. city of Portland, Oregon. That's where the 16th IAAF World Indoor Championships in Athletics officially opened Thursday at the Oregon Convention Center. For many of the athletes, the four-day competition is a tune-up for the Rio Olympics in August, but not for Russian athletes. They've been banned from Portland 2016 because of doping violations. The IAAF is not expected to decide whether to lift Russia's ban until the end of March at the earliest. If history is any indicator, look for the host United States to top the medals table in Portland. At the last World Indoor Championships, held in Poland in 2014, the Americans won the most medals, 12, including 8 gold. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports shout-out for 18-year-old American high jumper Vashti Cunningham, who will be competing at her first World Indoor Championships. Vashti is the daughter of former National Football League quarterback Randall Cunningham. 4 days ago at the same Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Vashti cleared 1.99 meters, a new world junior record, at the USA Indoor Track and Field Championships. It's also the best height by a woman this year. Vashti Cunningham will be using Portland 2016 as a springboard to what she hopes will be her first Olympics in Rio. And if you go to the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page, you can see a nice photo of Vashti clearing the bar. VOA! I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
What's better than the Sunny Side of Sports? More Sunny Side of Sports. Listen to our new expanded show now on VOA Africa.
And this VOA programming note, beginning March 21st, the Sunny Side of Sports will expand to 30 minutes daily, Monday through Friday. So be sure to tune in at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for the newly expanded 30-minute Sunny Side of Sports, beginning March 21st. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is David Legg, our African football guru. Good evening, David.
Thank you, Sunny.
David, let's kick off with the CAF Champions League. And how about the recent results?
Yes, Sunny, we got last 32 first leg results. Zesco of Zambia, 4. Haroya of Guinea, 1. Alatri Tripoli of Libya, 1. Al-Hilal of Sudan, 0. APR of Rwanda, 1. Young Africans of Tanzania, 2. Recreativo de Bolo of Angola, 0. Al-Ahli of Egypt, 0. Club Africain of Tunisia, 1. Mouloudia Bejaia of Algeria, 0. Stade Malien of Mali, 2. Cotton Spore of Cameroon, 0. Kaiser Chiefs of South Africa, 0. ASIC of Ivory Coast, 1. Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa, 2. AC Leopards of Congo Brazzaville, 0. Vida Casablanca of Morocco, 5. Knaps of Madagascar, 1. St. George of Ethiopia, 2. TP Mazembe of DRC, the holders, 2. Union Douala of Cameroon 0, Zamalek of Egypt 1, Etoile of Congo, Brazzaville 1, Entente Setif of Algeria 1, V Club of DRC 1, Ferroviario Maputo of Mozambique 0, Wari Wolves of Nigeria 0, Almarek of Sudan 1, Enyimba of Nigeria 5, Vitalo of Burundi 1, and finally Olympic Kouribga of Morocco 1, Etoile Sahel of Tunisia 1. Well, Sonny, one that stands out immediately is Mozambique, the holders, being held to a 2-2 draw by St. George in Ethiopia. And another indication of the great support Ethiopians give football, this match was moved from Addis Ababa, which has a capacity national stadium of 30,000, to Bahir Dar. Now, Bahir Dar is a fairly new venue for African football. It's 700 kilometers north of Addis Ababa, and it's got a stadium that holds 60,000, and there was not a vacant seat in that stadium. A tremendous crowd, tremendous atmosphere. St. George took the lead. Ajay, the Ghanaian, who has been featuring regularly on the sunny side of sport of late, he equalized on the stroke of half-time. An own goal put Mozambique ahead early in the second half. And then back came the Ethiopians to equalize on the hour mark, so a 2-2 draw. You would have to say, though, advantage Mozambique. This weekend, the return match at the Stade Mozambique in Lubumbashi, an artificial pitch, an 18,000 capacity crowd, and it would be a real shock if Mozambique did not go through to the last 16 stage. Nigerian clubs, mixed results. Wari Wolves going down 1-0 at home to Almarek. Almarek last season, semi-finalists, so not a huge surprise that. But nevertheless, from a Nigerian perspective, I think the belief was that Wari Wolves could build a lead of some sort at home. And you've got to say now that the Wolves are really up against it. They've got to go to Sudan and win there to try and qualify for the next stage. On the other hand, in Yimba, the African champions in 2003 and 2004, extremely impressive, slamming in 5 goals with just 1 conceded. And among those goals were 2 from Udo. He scored 2 in the preliminary round against the Vipers of Uganda, and now another 2, so he's one of the leading goal scorers. Needless to say, I think Enyimba can start planning for the next round. And it looks like, Sonny, that in that round, they'll face Etoile Sahel of Tunisia, the 2015 CAF Confederation Cup winners. Etoile going away to Morocco against Kouribga, taking the lead and finishing with a 1-1 draw. And that's been one of the secrets of success of Tunisian clubs and Egyptian clubs too, down the years in the CAF club competitions. You go away, you score goals, you get at least a draw, and then you finish off the business at home. Also, mixed results for the South African clubs. An impressive 2-0 home victory for Mamelodi Sundowns over AC Leopards of Congo Brazzaville. Sundowns totally dominated the first half. The only surprise was that it took them 45 minutes to get in front. A superb goal from Keegan Dolly, a shot from outside the box. And then in the opening minutes of the second half, a Colombian, Leonardo Castro, doubled the lead. Leopards improved a bit after that, but it was Sundowns with the best chance of scoring a game when they were awarded a late penalty, but the Liberian Anthony Lafour had his shot saved. And that could yet be significant, because I feel with a 3-0 lead, Sundowns would have been just about home and dry. A 2-0 lead, they should scrape through, but Leopards very tough at home. They've got a bone-hard pitch, which is not the sort of surface that South Africans, particularly teams like Sundowns, who like to play a passing game, are going to be comfortable on. But if Sundowns was celebrating victory, it was certainly doom and gloom in Soweto for Kaizer Chiefs. And our Kaizer Chiefs officials like to tell us that their club is among the top clubs in the world of football, but I'm afraid their record in Africa suggests anything but. They've never qualified for the group stage of the Champions League, and it certainly doesn't look like they're going to make it this year either. AFC Mimosas of Ivory Coast, their opponents, are a pale shadow of the side that conquered Africa way back in 1998, and there was a confidence that Chiefs could build a first-leg lead. But that confidence proved ill-founded, because AFC took an early second-half lead from a corner. Bakayoko nodded the ball into the net, ASIC then successfully defended their lead for a 1-0 away victory. And now they must be firm favourites to at least draw the second leg in Abidjan this weekend and go through to the last 16. Egypt have two powerful contenders, it's Al Ahly and Zamalek, and they will be quite satisfied with their away results. Al Ahly went to Lobolo of Angola and forced a 0-0 draw, and that was certainly a come down for Lobolo, who had scored 5 goals at home in the preliminary round. That, incidentally, Sonny, was the debut match for the new Al Ahly coach, Martin Yol, formerly the manager of Tottenham Hotspur and Fulham in the English Premier League. Zamalek, they went to Cameroon and they did even better. They won 1-0 away to Union Douala, the only goal coming from the Burkina Faso defender, Mohamed Koffi, after 59 minutes. And Zamalek's new coach is the former manager of Aston Villa and Birmingham City, the Scot Alex McLeish. So we've got a very strong EPL influence at the moment in the top Cairo clubs.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. The VOA's social media reporter, Andrew Palcheski, joins us once again in our Washington studios. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
What's trending on this Wednesday in the sports world?
Well, something that's trending that we were talking about, I believe that you've had an athlete reach out to you on Twitter. You were tweeting at them. They liked something that you tweeted. So tell us a little bit about this.
I like to be put on the spot, Andrew. Vashti Cunningham, who I mentioned earlier, I sent out a tweet saying she's one of the American athletes to watch at the upcoming IAAF World Indoor Championships, which get underway on Thursday in Portland. And sure enough, Vashti saw the tweet and she responded with a like. I like those likes, Andrew.
Like the likes, absolutely. she's at Vosh Tizzle underscore on Twitter. So yeah, that was great that she reached out to you like that, you know, showing again how athletes are using social media to reach out to fans and journalists and all kinds of people out there in the social media world.
And she has a very interesting background, doesn't she, Andrew?
She does. So she has, her father is Randall Cunningham, who was a former NFL quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, Baltimore Ravens,
great
Minnesota
athlete.
Vikings. An amazing athlete. And as we were just talking, her mother is a South African dancer or ballerina.
Dancer, ballerina. Okay.
So with parents like that, how can you not be good at sports, right? You know, she's got the force and the power from her father and the agility and conditioning maybe from her mother. So, and that's why she's doing so well in this competition, I'm sure.
And we'll be watching her in Portland as well as the other athletes. Should be a great competition. What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, we have the NCAA tournament is coming up. It's actually kicking off with the full 64 teams tomorrow. We did the play-in games over the past couple nights. And so as part of this kickoff for March Madness, Twitter has announced they're doing a couple different emojis that are going to pop up when you use certain hashtags for March Madness. So today is the day I'm putting you on the spot.
Okay.
I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to describe, obviously, our listeners can't see what they look like, but I'm going to do my best to describe what they look like.
I'll give you my hashtag.
And you're going to guess and see which hashtag they line up with. So
okay.
Some of them are easier than others. I'll kind of walk you through some of them. But, all right. So the first one is the icon is like a little bracket. So you have the successive kind of going down the little where the team names would be winnowing down. So that's the first emoji. So what do you think that lines up with?
Hashtag madness.
I will give you credit for that. It's hashtag March Madness.
March Madness.
March
okay.
Madness, yes. Now, the next one is that same bracket, but it's got a kind of a line down the middle. It's in two pieces.
Okay.
So what would that be?
Hashtag Sweet 16? No.
So that one, it's easier if you see it. So I'll give you partial credit because actually Sweet 16 is one of them, and we'll get to that in a second. But this one is hashtag bracket busted.
Bracket busted.
So of course,
well, that's mine already, Andrew.
As people fill out the brackets, of course, you know, in the first round even, you know, if you don't pick the right upsets, your bracket can be done. Especially some years when some of the top teams lose in the first or second round, people's brackets are busted. So that one's going to be, we see a lot of that maybe on Friday, Saturday, Sunday as the tournament progresses.
Okay.
So got the next one is it looks like a high-heeled shoe and it's got some kind of sparkly things around it.
I got that one. Hashtag Cinderella.
Absolutely. So the Cinderella teams, like we talked about yesterday
with
Davidson.
One of the Cinderella teams.
Exactly. Like Davidson in 2008 with Steph Curry, his team was a 10 seed. They went to the Elite Eight, a Cinderella team, as they call it. because it's a fairy tale story.
Now, so. It's not a Cinderella team, Andrew, but Yeheus is on your right now. Mm-hmm. He's not picking Kansas, Andrew. He's got another team in mind.
Michigan.
Who do you like, Yeheus?
Michigan. Yes.
And to be fair, I did pick Michigan as one of the upsets. Not to go all the way, but at least to do well and get through a couple rounds. So.
So Yeheus likes them lifting the trophy.
I think so. The coach is behind them.
So we'll skip through a couple of them are pretty obvious. There's a number 8 that's for hashtag Elite 8. There's a 16 on top of a cupcake for, of course, hashtag Sweet 16.
I like those.
And then there's a basketball icon for the Final Four. And for the hashtag National Championship, there's the NCAA trophy that one of those teams will be lifting. But I'll give you the one last one. This is a very tricky one. It's two pairs of sneakers, and they kind of look like they're moving a little bit.
Hashtag championship game? Hashtag, I don't know.
It's a tough one. It's hashtag let's dance. As of course, the NCAA okay. tournament's known as the Big Dance, and a lot of teams let's will be dance. Dancing starting tomorrow.
Let's dance. Nothing but net. Andrew Palcheski, VOA social media reporter. Thanks for joining us, Andrew.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And we'll see you again on Thursday. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yeheus Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Okay, thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, Zimbabweans with dual citizenship in New Zealand. But first, some music. Here is Style Plus from Nigeria with Ready to Go.
Style Plus.
Style Plus from Nigeria with Ready to Go.
Well, former Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation staffer Sipho Dube has ventured into a carrier business in Auckland, New Zealand. Dube's company called Kalima Investments plays a critical role in moving and receiving mail and other accessories into the country. He tells VOA's Gibbs Dube businesses like his courier service are a lifeline for Zimbabweans who have dual citizenship in New Zealand.
Well, in Auckland, like all other concerned Zimbabweans, what we've done or what I've done personally as an individual is more of enhancing myself academically. There is so many New Zealanders and so many Zimbabweans to say we've got dual citizenship. We've come from Zimbabwe and the whole of Africa at large that have settled in this country, New Zealand. I am also one of those. And in pursuit of a brighter future, and perhaps investment backward back in Zimbabwe, what we've done is enhancing ourselves as individuals academically. So I also enhance myself academically in the studies of communication and journalism.
Now, tell us a bit about what you are doing, you know, in terms of business.
Like I said earlier on, the arena overseas is about investment. And I also went into that very same kind of area and sphere of investment after having done a master's in business administration at one of the universities in Auckland. And I decided to pick on communications in its widest perspective. So there is Australian companies that send items to New Zealand, and there is American companies and individuals that are sending items to New Zealand. So what I did is I opened a company that deals with accepting all those items or the selected contracts, and we redistribute them or deliver them around Auckland.
How viable is that company?
New Zealand as a developing country is a consumeristic environment or a consumeristic country, meaning there is very little production done here. The main trend in terms of business dealings is just consumption. So you'll find most business is mainly about just consumption as in stuff that has been manufactured away from New Zealand, just being brought into the country for distribution purposes. You find automobiles, for instance, as a distribution within the country is one of the biggest investments. The same kind of communications that I'm talking about is very big business. And also, again, in the communications sector, we've got a very huge number of Zimbabweans, mainly young guys who used to work for companies like the TTC, as in the telecommunications back home. They're all here digging trenches and stuff like that for the fiber optic. All that is still communications. And those are the major kind of businesses. The other type of business that is very, very viable in New Zealand is construction. The population of the country is below 5 million at the present moment. And construction in terms of building houses and stuff like that, you'll find mostly it's all about people from Africa, trades people from Africa coming to sort of like put New Zealand on the world map.
Now, finally, do you have any message for Zimbabweans?
Well, Zimbabwe is home. And like they say, home is best. We are in New Zealand, or perhaps we are in the diaspora, including those that are in Australia, those that are in the UK, those that are in wherever, including the USA. We are also concerned about the deteriorating state of the economy. Therefore, I'm also one of those who is seriously concerned about that. And the main activities that we are all involved in as young Zimbabweans or old Zimbabweans in the diaspora is investment back home and also assisting our grandparents and relatives and also the whole community at large in terms of putting food on the table.
That was Sipho Dube, former ZBC broadcaster, speaking with VOA's Gibbs Dube from Auckland, New Zealand.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to African News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
United States Ambassador to Cameroon, Michael Hoza, underscored the importance of transparency and strong institutions as he joined 20 ministers of the government of the Republic of Cameroon this month at an anti-corruption forum in Yaoundé. On March 2nd, the minister in charge of the Supreme State Audit Office, Ms. Emba Acha Fomundum Rose, opened the Pan-African Conference on the Prevention of and Fight Against Fraud and the Misappropriation of Public Funds, where she called for the elimination of corruption and the promotion of good governance and transparency. In his remarks, Ambassador Hoza said, "Preventing and fighting fraud and the misappropriation of public funds is vital for the development of Cameroon. The United States has learned its own lessons on this subject throughout our history, and we learned that building strong institutions was essential to combat corruption. We are still learning." Ambassador Hoza further noted that this is not a struggle that is alien to America. That is why we believe it is essential to share lessons learned. Corruption steals directly from the pockets of citizens, be they American or Cameroonian, or from anywhere else in the world for that matter. To truly make a nation's economy flourish and for its potential to be unleashed, said Ambassador Hoza, corruption must be reduced and eliminated. Otherwise, corruption is one of the key guarantees that the cycle of poverty continues for nations. The ambassador also observed, "Make no mistake, the public is always watching and judging public officials. Perceptions can equal realities to them, and therefore public opinion and freedom of the press matter, and it matters a lot for all democracies." The United States has been partnering with Cameroon in anti-corruption efforts for the past 10 years, sharing experience and strengthening partnerships with key institutions and citizens. Over the past 3 years, U.S.-Cameroon cooperation against the misappropriation of public funds has increased through collaboration with the Ministries of Public Contracts, Finance, and Justice, and also with specialized agencies such as the Public Contracts Regulatory Agency and the National Agency for Financial Investigation. The United States is proud to stand with its partner Cameroon and other African nations to help those nations guarantee the integrity and transparency that good government demands.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We will discuss the World Bank Conference on Land and Poverty. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Do you love sports? VOA Africa has more of what you love, an expanded Sunny Side of Sports show, more on-the-scene reports and analysis, plus what's trending in the sports world. Come to VOA Africa for the expanded half hour of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Remember, tune in starting Monday, March 21st, right here on VOA Africa.